We're going to talk today about the result of a research project that we recently completed in Jackson, Mississippi. And it was really a multi-level intervention to increase teen seatbelt usage. No conflicts of interest, either myself or Dr. Kilborn. We don't make that much. And give you a little background here. This really, it was a fun study. We're able to build on some work that one of my colleagues at Meharry, Erwin Goldzweig, who's the director of our Meharry State Farm Alliance, had done. And he'd been working with the state legislature and people in Jackson, Mississippi, to pass primary seatbelt legislation. And so he'd been down there for several years, and one of the things that he was able to do was observations, some intersex observations and things. And so we had some baseline data available to us that might not otherwise have been. So, again, just backgrounds, as probably everyone here knows, is motor vehicle crashes are one of the leading causes of death for teens 16 to 19, and that it's particularly high for males and for African Americans. Again, in 2008, over close to 4,000 teens, 15 to 19, died from unintentional motor vehicle crashes. Close to 500,000 were injured, and with over 27,000 of them requiring hospitalization. Seat belts, as again we know, is probably the greatest intervention in terms of saving lives and reducing the severity of injuries. Between 1975 and 2002, it's estimated that over 164,000 fatalities were prevented by seatbelts. And nationally, more than 60% of motor vehicle fatalities to teens were among those who were unrestrained. So the target of this was teens in the Jackson Public Schools, and one of the reasons is that in Mississippi was at the bottom in terms of seatbelt usage. Again, it ranked in 2006 had 60.8% of usage of seatbelts, and from that study that Mr. Goldzweig had completed, only 18% of teens, African American teens in Jackson, was in the city of Jackson, wore seatbelts, and this was done using the NHTSA observation protocol. So this was a challenge. We were working with them, and this was the reason we wanted to focus our efforts among the teens in Jackson. And so between 1999 and 2007, 925 teens in Jackson were killed from motor vehicle crashes. And despite passage of primary seatbelt legislation in 2006, the state of Mississippi still ranks near the bottom for seatbelt usage. And this sort of was my last comment on the previous presentation is that, again, it's not just the passage of laws that make a difference. It's, you know, both enforcement and education efforts that go along with that. So we know that that African American male teens have among the lowest rates of seatbelt usage, and certainly they were the lowest in the city of Jackson. And so we wanted to focus on strategies that would increase teen seatbelt usage among the the high school age population. We used a multi-level intervention as our primary focus. And the reason, again, is that we felt that a single intervention wasn't going to do this. We need to do and particularly in working with teens, that, you know, you can do an intervention and it's sort of here today, gone tomorrow. And, you know, even if you have an effect in terms of working with them in a classroom situation or working with a community group, those effects oftentimes don't carry over. And so we wanted to do something that, again, the notion of doing a multi-level intervention where our primary intervention was using service learning in a classroom. Those students work with a teacher to develop interventions which they implemented within their schools. And then we also work with a community coalition to get them involved and working with us. And so a lot of what we did in terms of working with the coalition was we engaged them both within the schools and helping us sort of develop a low media messaging campaign that involved both radio, television with PSAs. I mean, we did movie trailers, we put up billboards, and a lot of this, again, wasn't funded through the research grant. These were activities by engaging the community that they provided in kind. And so I think we've calculated that we had almost as much in-kind contribution from our community partners as we actually got from the grant. One of our partners was the medical mall, or it was not the medical mall, it was another mall, the only mall left in the city of Jackson, and they actually did a contest at the end of each year where all the schools came and they presented some of the interventions and things, and they talked about them, and there was an award of $5,000 given by the mall to the best, the student group that they felt did the best job. So again, and that was over 4 years of the intervention. So again, we had a lot of community engagement in this. Our partners went out, they spoke at churches, they spoke at different community functions and things to promote, you know, trying to work with parents and create a culture, trying to change the culture to promote seatbelt usage. For the service learning projects, the students implemented, again, a number of projects. And it usually, again, what we did is we had a great idea, okay? And this is, you know, we're going to work in the schools. So in year one, we went down, we met with the superintendent and basically all the top school administrators in the Jackson Public Schools. I mean, we went out. He sent out things to all the principals, you know, that this was an approved district intervention and asked them to work with us. So then we got down to the teachers and they were real excited because we gave them some resources also, a couple $1,000s for, you know, to help with this and to be able to purchase materials and things for their interventions. So year one was a planning year. By the time we got to year two, we'd already had a change of three superintendents. Every principal in all of our intervention schools had changed. All the teachers throughout the project switched schools. I mean, it turned out to be a very challenging, you know, site to try to do an intervention. And so this was, again, just sort of the backdrop of the work that we did. The community, as I said, the community coalition was established, and we met monthly, and we invited the Chamber of Commerce, the Mayor's Office. We had some very powerful people participating, and because they recognized the nature of the problem and how, you know, the level of, in terms of when you look at the overall mortality rates and things in the state of Mississippi and in the city in particular, you know, the problem that motor vehicle crash fatalities had. So we had three major hypotheses. The first is that the school-based service learning intervention that targets youth in the Jackson schools would increase her knowledge, attitudes, and rates of seatbelt use as measured both through pre-post surveys and observations. We did observations in both at school parking lots and at targeted community intersections as well. Our second hypothesis was that a community coalition would be effective in changing organizational and public policies that promote seatbelt use by teens. And again, some of the things that occurred were we actually got businesses and many of the schools to put up buckle up signs on their parking lots and these were some of the student-driven interventions as well. It's working with community and schools, and they did a number of really exciting things. They sent out information, the Chamber of Commerce sent out information in their newsletter to all the businesses reminding them of primary seatbelt laws and, you know, and providing information to them and education as well. Our third hypothesis was that a low-cost community-developed multimedia campaign that employed us, what we call the saturation strategy, would improve the knowledge and attitudes by youth. And again, as I said, we try to target periods that in terms of that would capture when youth are most available in terms of radio and television. And our local radio stations work with us, and they gave us playing time in the sort of the 2 to 5 o'clock block right after school when kids are most likely to be in their cars, and in the morning as well. The television PSAs, you know, they do those at 3 a.m. on Sunday morning. So we did those for a couple of years and figured that wasn't really a strategy that, so we dropped that. The movie trailers, we started, and they were, the theaters were very cooperative with us with those. But again, we found that those, the trailers, there was only one movie house in Jackson. A lot of the problem that we had is a lot of the businesses were all moving on to the suburbs and outside of the city limits. And so, you know, when the kids, when they went to the movies, all of the theaters were outside of the city. And so we figured that that probably wasn't much bang for the buck there as well. So most of what we did was we had billboards, and we placed those near the schools. We placed those near, we tried to identify all the youth-serving businesses in the community. We worked with those businesses so that they would put up posters, you know, buckle-up posters that the kids designed and things, you know, and within a two-mile radius of the schools. And we were going to focus a lot of effort on that, too. But then when we actually got out there and tried to identify all those youth-serving businesses within 2 miles of the schools, we found out that they all had left. So there weren't very many. So, I mean, these are some of the obstacles that we, or the challenges that we experienced in trying to implement this. So our research design, again, the intervention occurred over 4 years. We started as a quasi-experimental pre-post control group design, where we matched the high schools by size and sort of race, ethnicity, social economic intervention, and then we randomly assigned them to an intervention and controlled schools. There were over 8,000, close to 9,000 high school students in year one, and that was pretty stable over the 4 years. And the again, the strength of the design, we ended up sacrificing in beginning of year four, because what we found is that with the changes, all the changes that were occurring in the district, both at the classroom level with teachers and with principals, that going in and trying to re-educate everybody was just, you know, it was very, very challenging. And so with our program officer decided that we would focus on those schools. And we alternated schools, the control and the intervention schools, every other year. And so by year three, it was like, why don't we just focus on the school, the teachers and the schools that are really supportive of this. And we found that to be, the teachers that we ended up with were very, very committed to this project, and the kids loved it. And it was, you know, they did a lot of activities around this during the school year, apart from what we did. So the multi-level intervention that was used, the classroom curriculum, we had a consultant who was a service learning expert that worked with us and worked with the teachers, actually went down there at the beginning of the year and worked with the teachers in terms of learning how to do service learning, and modified the curriculum for their courses that they use with the students, so that again, it wasn't, we weren't asking them to do something apart from their regular curriculum. It was integrated into the classroom curriculum. And so whether it was health or math or English, they were able to incorporate service learning that focused on motor vehicle safety and particularly around seatbelt use. And so all of the projects that the kids did were focusing on motor vehicle safety and increasing teen seatbelt use regardless of what the actual course was. It was approved with passive parental consent because it was really an educational intervention and with active student consent. And then the parking lot and community intersection observations were ruled exempt by the IRB. Our consultant that worked with the teachers, our service learning consultant, had monthly teleconferences with them and also had them submit data so that we were able to monitor the sort of the strength of the intervention month to month over the school year. So service learning was a primary intervention. I think I probably said this. What the kids did was, again, they would develop their interventions, and usually over a semester. Sometimes teachers did it depending on the class and how enthusiastic they were about service learning, did it over both semesters, and that's why we had to monitor what they were doing. And they implemented they did whatever number of interventions that focus on reaching all of the kids in their school, so in the intervention schools. So I've talked about some of this. I'm going to let Dr. Kilbourn talk about the outcomes and the results.
And so it was challenging for me as well because I had never worked with field data. I've always had my nice tidy data sets come up to me, and one day Paul comes into my office with this box of little personal devices, and I go, what is this? But anyway, what I'm going to show is just for the service learning intervention. It doesn't use the community stuff. And I used a mixed-level model, and since I like to play with these things, I did it three ways. Okay, and these were the individual characteristics that we used to control for seatbelt use. And then we had the school or the site, because that's where the service learning was taking place, and so we should have a specific effect for the site during service learning. Are you following me here? This is mathy stuff, okay? And so then finally, those really went together, okay? So I used three different kinds of models, and I know I'm short on time. My favorite model was the fixed effect slopes for time, but allowed random effects for schools, because I noticed that there was difference in seatbelt uses at the school at the beginning, and so those were going to carry through. There was just a culture of more seatbelt use at some schools than other schools, and that model too actually controlled for that. And then finally, I re-estimated everything by gender, and that was where one of the most fun stuff came out. So we had 31 waves, we had a lot of data, I had a lot of statistical power, made me happy. And so if we looked at the average, there is 42.6% of drivers that were using restraint. And 30% of passengers actually buckled up. That surprised me still. Only 30% of passengers would be. This is, the big mess of different models, different stuff. And you can email me if you want this. So I'll actually get to what this meant. This meant that the cut to the chase, that during the following a service learning period, seatbelt use increased by 15% to 20% associated with a time of the intensive service learning. Okay? This was on top of a secular or a time increase, that fixed time effect of 4.8%. So we see an increase in seatbelts over the years. Okay, if you look at this, this all makes sense. We know from the literature that black drivers are less likely to use seatbelts, and that was confirmed by our study. We know that adults are more likely to use seatbelts than teen drivers, that was confirmed. We know that girls are good and they use it more often than boys. And we knew that a passenger actually decreased the likelihood of using. And then what was a little bit surprising to me, but maybe it won't be to y'all, is that, that the kind of vehicle you were driving had an effect on whether you buckled up or not. And so the way I'm interpreting that is if you were driving an SUV or a van, you were probably more likely to be the parent, although we controlled for that with age of driver. So I don't know, but they were more likely to buckle up. Okay, this is another mess. If you want this, I'll send it to you. But why did I think it was important to split the sample by gender? Because in most of my research, I found that gender has a strong moderating effect rather than just a mediating effect on almost any social phenomenon. And this was a social phenomenon. So what we found were that, when we're going through this, we found that the race difference was different. And the race difference was different in female drivers. For female black drivers, they were not as likely they were more likely to use a seatbelt, although not by very much. And male drivers, the problem was bigger. The disparity, the racial disparity was different. Okay. I'm going to kind of skip through because I'm running out of time, right? Yeah, okay. So, again, you know, when we actually looked at this, what was interesting was the service learning intervention did not, I have to go up a few to the table, did not really improve seatbelt use for women, for female drivers, but it did for males, which is really important because that's the group that actually has the lowest utilization. Okay. This was my fun model where I actually looked at the gender of the passenger and the gender of the driver and see what effect that had. And what we find is that, you know, the effect of having a male passenger kind of cuts your seatbelt use by almost 50%, no matter what the gender of the driver is. But I think probably one of the most surprising effects here would be the fact that female on female, if you're a female and you have a female driver with a female passenger has a 36% decrease in utilization. Whereas, so that really lowered their utilization, while having a female passenger for a male driver only decreased it by about 15%. Okay, so this I've said before. Now, I want to kind of, I'm not going to show that because we didn't do this. I want to kind of say, let Paul come back and say some things, but what can't be captured in these slides is the energy of how involved the kids got in the service learning intervention. The kids were into it. They did art posters and they showed them and they competed, and it really did change the culture in schools. And I am a big fan of service learning, so I think this could be replicated at relatively low cost in almost every public school system. You're on.
I think it's
our time. Okay. Okay. Yeah, did you have any questions? I have.